Welcome back to another episode of the Dose Adjustment Podcast, and we are on part two of Q&A.
We want to know what your actual day-to-day responsibilities were when you were deployed. So if you could only carry three things out of your medic bag, right, when you're out deploying, what are your three most valuable things? Simplify and get real value out of supplementation.
The information provided in this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only, and it does not establish a physician-patient or pharmacist-patient relationship. The opinions expressed by the hosts and guests are their own and do not constitute medical advice. This content is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any medical condition. Always consult with a licensed healthcare provider in your area before making any changes to your personal healthcare regimen or acting on any medical information shared in this podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of the Dose Adjustment Podcast. My name is Amir, your co-host, as always. I've got Chris with me today, and we are on part two of Q&A. So we've compiled a lot of questions that have come in through YouTube, through Facebook, other channels, in-store, emailed, combined a lot of them into similar types of questions, and we're here to answer those today for you. So we're going to jump right into it. Chris. We had some questions around, we want to know what your actual day-to-day responsibilities were when you were deployed. Were you seeing patients in a primary care setting? Were you working directly with units? Give us a sense of what medicine is like in the military. And I'm actually interested to hear this because I think I have one perception based on stories, but yeah, let's hear it.
So for me, like I said, started out 18 Delta, team medic, so is very austere, like Afghanistan medicine is pretty austere. But then you go into it, you have like all everything from me with a aid bag or even something smaller, like a butt pack with like trauma stuff in it, treating during a gunfight, or all the way up to like a what you would consider a level one trauma center available to you. And that's in Afghanistan, right? Afghanistan got very built out. So there was all of that. And you could do all of that in a period of hours. Okay. You could be like, you could take a patient from they just got shot on the objective to all the way through surgery.
So it is like progressive throughout your career. Like in the early part of your career, are you like deploying out in the field patrolling? And then as you progress and get really good at your job, they let you stay at the surgery center. Like, how does that work?
So I stayed out of the hospital in every possible way I could. Okay. Like I hated working there.
Yeah. Volunteer.
I'll go anything that's not in that setting.
Yep.
Because it's, you know, military medicine is pretty cool. Like they're very much on the leading edge of a lot of different things. Then there are some things that they're just not on the leading edge of. But for a lot of what you would consider like sports medicine, orthopedics, trauma kind of stuff, like they're at the leading edge. The special operations medicine is absolutely at the tip of that. There are most 18 Deltas, most special forces medics, SEAL medics, Ranger medics, PJs, I would absolutely let those medics work on me before most PAs and doctors I know. Yep. Without a doubt. Like, you know, if something was wrong, like there's that. Now, day to day. So team medicine is an 18 Delta. One thing SF will always tell their medics, you're a shooter first. So you're there as an adjunct to the team and you're a medic, but then you have all these other responsibilities. So if somebody does get hurt, yes, you're cross training your teammates so that they can take care of you if you get hurt. So like a lot of the classes like that we teach at Guerrilla Training, Guerrilla Medical is that like, we're taking that mindset. It's like, hey, if the medic's hurt, what do you do? You got to treat him. What do you do? So I want those guys to be trained up on that. So operationally, you know, did Afghanistan, worked, you know, just different stuff. And then that was interesting. So then following on to that, I'd gone to PA school. Again, did not want to do office medicine, primary care setting. I avoided that at all costs. I ended up back on active duty with special operations. There was a piece of that. There was a huge training component to that. There was even an operational component to that because of where I was working. I got to go do some really cool things. Mm-hmm. And there was no standard day to day, and there never has been. This is not how I want to do it.
So if, you know, for a lot of us that have
you know, our kids and how your kids do, right? That are coming up and they're deciding what they want to do for a career. You know, some want to be lawyers, some want to be doctors, some want to be entrepreneurs, some want to, you know, go to the military and fight first. You know, if somebody's interested in medicine, is a military track something that you'd recommend? How do they go about it? Do they need to have medical training prior to going in? How do they make sure they come in and get put in the lane they want to be put in versus, you know, going somewhere else?
So what I'll tell anybody, like, going in, like, absolutely. I think that I have opened more doors in my life from being a special forces guy than doing anything else. Like, you get into this club, this fraternity, this whatever it is, and it opens doors for you. It's an instant vetting process.
Right.
Because everybody you come in contact, it's such a small community, you're going to be in contact with people that are 1 or 2 degrees separation, and and it goes through the SF Boy network. Like, they're like, hey, what do you think of this guy? That guy's a fucking shitbag. Okay, you're not getting a job. Yep. You know, like, that's it. And that's all you need, because that's the guys you trust. And it works that way. And it opens a lot of doors. So that is one thing that I would encourage any young man, young woman that's wanting to get into it, to absolutely check it out. You'll never be younger and better shape and whatever than you are when you're looking at it then. Like, right. There's a finite window of when you're going to get there. Because to stay in the job, you have to get to a certain level of training at a younger age to expand on that. Because eventually, you're using those repetitions to keep you going. Because all kinds of things. I mean, and then it just opens a lot of doors. Now, military medicine, absolutely, it's a great pathway. You will. There is no medical training in the world like the Special Operations Medic course. It was harder than PA school. Without a doubt, mm-hmm. for different reasons, but without a doubt, it was harder than PA school. I'm not saying that like being an 18 Delta makes you a PA, but you will take those skill sets and they will change your life on what you believe you can get through and accomplish.
Right. All right. So if you could only carry 3 things out of your medic bag, right, when you're out deploying, what are your 3 most valuable things? You only got 3.
Only got 3.
And this is a question for everybody at home. What should they have in their own personal?
And okay. Pack? So I guess if you're talking like personal in the state stuff, like in the States. Yeah.
But hunting, fishing, getting wild, getting after it, enjoying life, hiking, you know, out in the mountains, sort of crew.
Okay.
Right. Our people.
Tourniquet.
Okay.
Absolutely. Tourniquet.
Number 1, tourniquet.
Hunting, fishing, hiking, that, you know, chest seal, you got something like that. And then just kind of basically all bleeder stuff.
Yep.
Like that's your most likely injury, debilitating thing. Almost everything else can be kind of improvised, right? If you need to make a crutch, a splint, or whatever, cut up some trees, whatever. It's, you can improvise a tourniquet, but it would be all bleeder stuff. Bleeding support.
Love it. All right. Very good. Next question. And I kind of feel this one a little bit too, especially in my past. I've got literally 100 different supplements in my cabinet, each with a supposed benefit. I feel overwhelmed by which ones I should be taking and how often. How should someone simplify and get real value out of supplementation? And I'll say I'll feel this too, because I've at times had shoe boxes, mm-hmm. right, of supplements, especially owning a couple of drugstores. I tend to take everything home that might have potential benefit because we're literally throwing it away at expiration date. Like, no, that's still good. It's fine. It's so, I feel it. What's your advice? How do you approach it? Do you have this? Do you have boxes and boxes of supplements at your house?
Not to some degree, but I've kind of got away from that because it's just that it's supplementation. So here's the thing about supplements, all supplements, and the difference that kind of people need to understand. When something is FDA approved as a pharmaceutical, the burden of proof is on the drug company to prove that it works. Mm-hmm. If something is a supplement, the burden of proof is on the consumer to prove it does not work.
Right.
Right. So you can take something and be like, magic box of dirt, take this, right? So I mean, basically it's do your research, because it is that. So whether you're getting like, okay, why did I, and obviously, you know, ownership, everything, T1RX, we own it, we're working on it. We're giving it to our friends, our patients, those things. We're staking our reputation on what it is. And like openly saying, no, this is our thing. This is what we do. Why does it matter? So most of the stuff you get, it's most places are getting their stuff from the same source a lot of times. It's the way it's broken down. Right? Why does MagChange work so good? Because the way you broke it down, it's taking those magnesiums, that tri-blended magnesium, and it's formulated in a way that is
blending it with organic substances, it will
cross the blood brain better. And yep. So it's making it metabolically available.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
That's it. Right? The vitamin DK2. Why? Well, okay, it's broken down. We are making it, it's biologically available. It's not just like taking it. So there's, because you can make it cheaper.
Yeah.
But for it's, sure. But you know, like we know, sure. Like you can, but it's taking those things and saying, okay, we're going to make it cheaper. We're going to do this, but what are we doing? What is it? How is it packaged? What is the breakdown? Okay. Another thing that we use is like even Probaxter, right? Like why do we support that one? Well, probiotics, they're just bacteria. How are they getting to your intestine? They have to be encapsulated in a way that'll make it through the stomach acid, make it through the small intestine, and actually get to where, because most people don't want to use a probiotic suppository. Yeah. You know, that's what
unless
it is.
Unless you're from Europe.
Yep, unless you're from Europe. Yep. If you're from France, probably going to come in and ask for one.
I think the other thing too, and if you have access and availability to lab testing and biomarkers through your PCP, take your box of supplements in. They'll look at your lab values and they can probably throw about half of them away. Mm-hmm. Right away. Some vitamins are good past expiration date, fish oil and that type of stuff. I don't really mess with that because it becomes rancid. I would say go ahead and throw that away. But by and large, when you have lab testing and your doctor has a really good full picture of how you're doing, or your pharmacist, if you have a good relationship with them, they can probably eliminate a lot of those excess supplements that you bought over time and just get rid of them. I know I have some that I take just because I have. I take red beetroot, right, from time to time. I think it does anything for me. You know, it doesn't even turn my pee a cool color. But I just take it because I have it, you know, until I get rid of it. But by and large, I threw a lot of that crap out. You know, I only take the supplements that support my goals physically, mentally. And if it's not working for me, you know, we get rid of it out of the stack.
And it's that thing, right? Is that I'm always big on the bell curve of human performance. You're going to fall under it somewhere. When you're to the point, like we have some patients that are at that 95th percentile that are trying to get to that 99th percentile.
Yeah.
For these guys, supplementation is key because they have done the work. They are at that razor's edge of like, all right, we're tweaking this. All right, you're going to change, even to the point where we're changing the time of day they take certain things.
Yep.
Okay, that's really dialing it in. Now, you can get to that 95th percentile, tighten up your diet first.
Yeah.
Absolutely tighten up your diet first. Then go down like, okay, start with the multivitamin. Start, okay, what are you missing? Am I missing sleep? That's the thing I need. Why am I missing sleep? Are you a woman? Is it because of progesterone? Do you need magnesium? Why is it? And then you need the answer to why, so you know what you're taking and for what reason. Those are the things. Like, I'm not, you know, for me, I wasn't processing magnesium the right way or getting it so that it helped me. Like those, you know, the whole sleep, the spray.
Yep.
Why does it
sleep slime?
I think that's just what we
need to change. That's not the name of it.
But that's what everybody calls it. So we're probably going to change the name to that. But but melatonin. Again, people are like, I took my melatonin and it didn't work. Well, when did you take your melatonin? Did you take it at the right time? Because you need to take it when the sun's setting. It works with your circadian rhythm.
Yep.
It is the matchstick that starts the fire that would be the fire in sleep and it's getting there. So that's where it matters. So yeah, I guess going back to the supplement thing. See where you're deficient. Yep. Use symptoms, not just I need to take everything.
Yep.
You don't.
Yeah, there's a million infomercials out there that all promise something when it comes to supplements. So, all right, I think we nailed that one. All right, this one's like a little controversial here, so we'll talk about it a bit. A lot of news and chatter about people taking ivermectin for parasite cleanses and even COVID and cancer prevention.
Yeah.
So let's not get our license taken away here on this, but we can say what other people are saying about it, I think, you know, and what we know about parasites.
Okay. This is, again, anecdotal.
Yeah.
It's me. I'll use myself as an example. I have been to a lot of shitty places all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
Had never done a parasite cleanse. That was a significant emotional event when I did it because there was some shit in there, literally. So take that for what it is.
Yep.
But I felt better when I did it.
Yep.
Right. It's a hard sell for me to say in the United States, in the United States, we don't have a parasite problem. Like, how is that possible?
Yeah.
People are fucking dirty.
Yeah. And I tried to do some research before the show. And again, it's hard to find good concrete evidence, but somewhere between maybe 30 and 40, 50% of people have some level of parasitic infection.
Well, we just look at the school starts and how many kids come in for pinworm infection.
Yeah.
That ain't the only thing, you know, that's not it. It just, their butt itches. So it's
yep.
symptomatic.
Like, 100%.
So 100%. Just, you know, take that for what it is.
So what I think we're trying to say is ivermectin can be a really good thing for a parasite cleanse done through a provider. Please do not take the veterinary form. We've got a trading post gas station run by, doesn't matter, but regardless, you know, some patients are telling me they're going down there and getting it and they're just ripping the packet open and dumping, you know, X amount into their coffee in the morning.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, how much are you taking? Like, I have no idea. And, so, you know, real legit medicine can have side effects. It can make you nauseous, dizzy, a whole host of other things.
Lowest possible dose for the desired end state. I mean, there's even like high doses of ivermectin causing blindness.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that is ungood. You know, you're not taking, if it is something you're going to take, talk to your provider. If it's something you want to do, do a risk benefit analysis, let them break down, say, hey, there are no studies that are showing this concretely. Yep. Everything about this is anecdotal.
Yeah.
Is it, so you're going to go over that, you know, do no further harm, like make a informed decision about what you're doing. That's kind of where I'll leave it.
Yeah, 100%. And then, you know, when it comes to cancer and COVID, what people will say, right, or what doctors are believing why it may be beneficial. And we've heard stories, right, where people have had incredible results in tumor reduction, even in stage 4 diseases, like stuff that'll almost make you cry, you know, when you hear the story. But we don't have the concrete proof of why it works or how it works or which cancers are sensitive to it. So much more to come on that, I think, in the future. But basically, it's a disruption, I believe, in the signaling, especially for viruses and COVID and whatnot. It's a disruption in the signaling and the way that the proteins, the viruses move proteins through cells. It disrupts that, right? Yeah. So that's the theory of why it may work against COVID. And then when it comes to cancer, it inhibits DNA replication, specifically potentially in certain type of cancers, and they saw benefit in the lab.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that's the only thing they really have is like, hey, in the lab, in animal studies, in certain types of cancer, this is found to be very beneficial. It may actually be very beneficial. We just really don't know. It's a super great area. Talk to your primary care provider.
And here's the other thing with it, much like ketamine and other things, it's so old, there's no money to research it.
There is no money.
No one's ever going to research it. If you can buy it at the Trading Post gas station, nobody gives a shit about researching it because there's no money in it.
Yeah, 100%. And this is probably where HHS should come along and actually put some of their funding dollars.
Absolutely. And that's what,
you know, as opposed to gender transformation.
Yeah. This is a very much a, you know, make America healthy again issue of like, hey, let's actually look into this. If there's something we have in this, because the science is old and it becomes unfundable because patents run out and those kind of things, that's absolutely where that stands.
Yep. Next question was really around thinning hair. I'm 50 years old. I feel like my hair is thinning. What options are available for patients that actually works? So I talked a little bit about what I'm doing. I think it's actually been really beneficial in my family, myself, my brothers, my dad, all have the same genetic predisposition to losing our hair. Right? And so I'm the oldest of my 4 brothers. I won't say I have the most hair still, but I'm in second place for sure. My dad has an amazing shiny head top for as long as I've known him, you know, so he was probably, I guess, 22 when I came of consciousness, you know, in the world, 23. So what do we know? What do we actually know is like minoxidil works, you know, topical minoxidil is actually proven FDA approved, regrows hair. From there, you can combine it with things like finasteride or dutasteride. I'm using a copper peptide, which is like a new emerging therapy, you know, in combination with an oral pill and a little bit of biotin, just making sure I have all the raw ingredients to do it. But what do we know works? Minoxidil works. I think you can purchase maybe like 2% over the counter, but you'll see dermatologists using it at like the 7% mark.
Yeah.
Can be really effective. You've got to use it every day. Literally, if you, you know, are a non-compliant patient, you take 5 days on, 2 days off, you know, or a week off at a time, you will lose all the progress that you have.
Yeah, it's a consistency-based thing. Yeah, you have to use it.
Yeah, and one of the things that, like, for me, you know, I was kind of just ready to go ahead and shave my head, actually. I actually have hair, which is great. I was just going to go ahead and shave my head, and for my wife, she was like, no way. No way. Take some of your medicine, you know, so... Anyways, talk to your dermatologist, your primary care provider on that. We kind of already talked about Messaline Blue. So some of my family members have been taking Messaline Blue. They say they feel amazing. Why haven't we heard of it? Kind of goes back to the whole thing. I think the Messaline Blue is actually the first drug ever approved by the FDA in the history of the world. Like it was the number one.
Yeah.
And I don't know what year that was, but probably around the 1900s. So just a quick history on Messaline Blue. It was developed in the 1800s as a dye. They would use it for, you know, pants and shirts, things of that nature. And then they discovered that it had antiviral properties. So it's used a lot for malaria. If you think about 1880, there's no antibiotics.
Yep.
There's no antivirals. And they found that Messaline Blue has this, you know, mild, you know, antimicrobial effect, antiviral effect. It falls out of favor, you know, sometime in the 1900s. Mm-hmm. And then it started being used in the psychiatric wards, first to make sure that patients were actually taking their medicine.
Yep.
Because you'll pee blue, you know, if you ever have Messaline Blue, you'll have blue urine, so they could tell whether they were cheeking the meds.
And it's very important to tell your patients that that's going to happen. I have forgot to mention that a couple times and getting some very interesting phone calls.
I may have had... had Emily, you know, take some of that, and she didn't say anything, you know, like she knew something was clearly off.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, by the way, I put that in your vitamin stack the other day. And she's like, is that why it was blue? I'm like, I didn't think to say something to me. Like that could be a huge deal. I hear stories during World War II. They were using it again for malaria prophylaxis out there. So anyways, it's got an antimicrobial effect, but what they found in the psych patients was they actually did better cognitively.
Yeah.
Right. And so why people take it today, I see it a little bit for COVID and whatnot and the antiviral effects, but mainly is improved cognition, right? So you think better, you think more clearly. It supports the mitochondria, which we have in literally every cell in our body besides red blood cells, I think might be the only one that don't have mitochondria. And they just help your energy centers to function better, right? There's a lot of news out there about NAD plus right now, kind of a similar function, only it's super portable and you can take it in a pill. For 85% of the people, they feel great on it. For 15% of the people, they're like, yeah, I don't feel any difference, and they decease therapy. So if it's something you're interested in, talk to your primary care provider. What I would avoid is taking online, like from Amazon or Google or any online place selling it.
Or the pet store,
right? So that's not necessarily the pharmaceutical grade. That can be the dye grade. It has no certificate of analysis. We don't know if it's actually Messaline Blue or crystal meth. And so please get it.
They'd probably sell out if it's crystal meth.
They probably would, yeah. But get it from a reputable place. I have no idea how they're selling this online. There are some serious drug interactions that have to be considered, especially if you're taking SSRIs like fluoxetine, Paxil, venlafaxine, et cetera. Talk to your provider first. Messaline Blue, winner. I think we've covered that before. So, all right. We're getting towards the end here. Alcohol. So can you share some strategies for dramatically reducing alcohol intake? I wouldn't call myself an alcoholic, but I enjoy a drink on most days of the week, and it becomes harder to wake up early, eat right, and work out. So probably not an uncommon question that you get in your population.
So
I'm going hard all day and enjoying some cocktails.
There is no medical reason to drink alcohol. No matter what. You know, like they tried to do that, like two beers, you know, this, that, like just, you know, all the different things and like the you know, glass of red wine and tannins and this stuff. That's all bullshit. Yep. Like that's not right. If you know, for a male, it's two drinks a week.
Okay.
It's like two drinks a week is like the recommended. Women, it's one.
Yep.
You know, like anything more than that isn't good. It's so how do you stop? That's a loaded question,
and if I understand the basis of the question, like this guy doesn't necessarily, a guy or gal, whoever it was, didn't necessarily stop completely, but they want a dramatic reduction. So I think really getting a good handle on alcohol use.
So the issues with stopping alcohol cold turkey, if you have a substance abuse disorder, delirium tremens is a phenomenon where your body goes into withdrawal from alcohol. Mm. it can be fatal. It is not something to be taken lightly. Now, if you're cutting back, if you're a you know, nightly drinker, but you're not drinking to intoxication, you're having a nightcap or whatever. If you go 5 days with no alcohol, any alcohol that you're craving is psychological. Your physiological cravings are gone. Don't, that's not, your body's not like, I need more. Like, it's not, it's like, it's 5 days, you detox it. It's, you get it out of your system and then it's in your head essentially. So then it's, if you're managing it, if you've got to that point where it's out of your system, then you just need to find a, one of the ways is to find another activity. Like, I need a drink. Well, I'm not going to take a drink. What do I need to go do? You know, like, I need to go do something else. Like, and you kind of shift pivot to whatever that may be. Whether it's meditation, whether it's going for a walk, whether it's like finding another stress relief, it's like, all right, well, that 20 minutes when I'd be sitting having a beer, I'm going to go to the gym, mm-hmm. or I'm going to work out or do, like, I don't know, Tai Chi, whatever. I don't care, but you basically, you were using it as a stress response.
Yep.
So it's ultimately, if you're just using it at that point and that at that low level, really, it's just the ritual of what you're doing.
Yeah.
That is triggering a stress reduction. Yep. You need to change the ritual.
Yeah, 100%. I agree. I think, you know, the strategies that I've utilized, you know, was patient group. I haven't had this exact question, but similar, you know, if we're trying to get people metabolically healthy, which is the fight that we're in every day, you know, I think go for that 20 minute walk. If you get home and you're ready to pour a drink, one, I think, you know, if you have kiddos in the house, or if you have a partner, a spouse who doesn't drink and they see you come home and just pour one, I think that's never a great example, right, for them. But if you can say, hey, why don't we go and play some catch? Why don't we go for a walk? Let's go do something that is, I don't want to say mindless, but it's kind of mindless, right? Because people who are stressed to the max about whatever, I don't, you know, nothing's that big of a deal in life. You know, when you really get down to it, those little things we stress over are really not that big of a deal. But
and switching it out, like even the stuff where it's like, okay, if it's a function of just having a drink,
yeah,
switch it to something that you don't drink all day.
Yeah.
Like I don't know, like they have a certain kind of club soda.
Yeah.
Like this is what I, you know, and switch that out so that it's, you're triggering your brain. And like, this is my wind down thing.
Yeah. And you're probably going to think this is a little foo foo here, but so I take the magnesium powder, mm-hmm. right? The mag change, right? Mm-hmm. And I'll dump that in a mason jar, you know, in the evenings, and I'll put some inositol, which is like a prebiotic. I'll put mm-hmm. that powder in there, and then I'll shake it up, put some water and ice, and we'll literally have like an evening cocktail, which is good for ourselves. Mm-hmm. But it's that ritual, right? Mm-hmm. Put the kids to bed. Sometimes I put passion fruit on it. No, not passion fruit. What's the one with the white seeds? Dragon fruit. Yeah, it looks cool, you know. But yeah, just replacing that need. Don't judge me.
If you didn't have all the kids you had, say you were gay.
Like, you're judging me a little bit right now.
I'm judging you a lot, but I'll try one.
But nonetheless, right, it's really just getting my magnesium in. I used to do this years ago with Calm.
Yeah.
Right? Remember that magnesium Calm product? It's actually a crappy magnesium that created more diarrhea than calmness. But it was the best they had at the time, so we won't judge them either. But anyways, just having kind of like an evening cocktail.
It goes back to that ritual, because you're like, what do you – people call it a nightcap. Why? Well, it's going to help me go to sleep.
Yeah.
Well, sort of.
Not really.
Alcohol is not good for your sleep in any way, shape, or form. And when you pass out, that's not sleeping.
Yeah.
Like, your brain doesn't go into a sleep cycle when you pass out. You're not getting REM sleep. Your brain's not recovering, all those things. So.
Yeah. And then the other thing I would say is like, hey, like you said, just limit it to one day a week, you know, or special events. You know, I think that's kind of where I've landed, you know, for myself personally and the way that we coach patients. Hey, if you're going to a wedding, if it's your anniversary, if it's this big thing that you're going out with the boys for the first football game of the season, right? And you want to have a drink then.
And enjoy it. And it really, like I said, limit it to two. Guys, like, you know, there was the thing, oh, no more than two a day or whatever. Well, then you get these guys who are like, well, I'm going to drink all two of my drinks. So I'm going to save them for 14 at a time. That way mm-hmm. I'm still meeting the numbers. But
You know, the other thing I see too is that people will drink when they're stressed.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll drink when they're celebrating.
Yep.
And right. So no matter if they have a good day or a bad day,
you're going to drink.
It's the same outcome, right? And it becomes a very negative cycle for them.
Oh, I feel that. And there's a huge component of the mindset of why you're doing it, right? Like, all of those things are true. Like, I've been through all of those things. Mm-hmm. And they break down. I mean, just if you ever get to the point where you're like, I need a drink to deal with something, you already fucked up.
Yeah.
Like that's where you went wrong. Like you're using it as a negative coping mechanism tool. And that's just the reality of it. Like
it seems like it's almost like an escape hatch.
It is.
You know, I ain't worried about it no more. Right. Cause you ain't thinking about anything.
And that's what it was. I mean, I've been there. Like, when truly honest with myself, like the day I became an alcoholic was the day I drank to forget something, you know, and that was the first time you do that. You're an alcoholic. Like you have now crossed that line of like, here's where it is for me now. It is not a social engagement thing. It is I'm using this to not feel feelings or process things psychologically or whatever. So that's, but
from a medication standpoint, you know, clinicians will use naltrexone, you know, and essentially it will, blunt the beneficial effects or the feel good effects of alcohol. Yep. Right. And so if you have two or three drinks and you don't feel anything off of it, you know, literally the idea is maybe you'll stop doing that negative thing for yourself. So anyways, that's available to talk to your primary care provider.
It works. I've been on it.
Okay.
I've taken it because I was an alcoholic, and then I've taken low dose naltrexone for the other immunomodulation and the other effects. Like, again, one of those things that they'll never study because there's no money in it, but some very interesting anecdotal, you know, like the do no further harm very much for me is a conversation to have with your patient and say, all right, these are the risk benefit analysis. You are an educated adult. I am educating you. What do you think? It is your body, you know, all those things.
Yeah. We haven't got a lot of questions recently around low dose naltrexone, but there is an amazing website called the LDN Research Trust. If you Google it, somebody who had tremendous benefit from LDN and a lot of money put this money into this research trust. It is untainted by pharmaceutical hands or government hands. And there is a ton of really, really good information. LDN has been something that I've taken over the years, not currently taking it, but it can be an amazing product for calming down the immune system for sure, for gut health, for behavioral issues even. I stopped drinking Monster when I was on LDN. I think I told you, I still, to this day, I don't drink Monster.
I've got a patient that had really bad breakthrough psoriasis, and I put him on that, and it modulated just down enough that to add to what they were on, that they are almost symptom free. They're thrilled with it.
Yeah, definitely calms the immune system. So LDN, hot topic. We'll talk about it more on a future podcast.
And somebody needs to do the Ivermectin Research Trust.
Yeah,
if you've got a lot of money and you watch this, hey, call that person and somebody dive in on that.
Reach out. We'll help you get it set up for sure. So. Well, hey, thank you for joining us again on this episode of the Dose Adjustment Podcast. If you missed episode one of the Q&A, you can literally click right here on the screen and it will take you to the first episode.
Right here on the screen. Right here.
Have a good day, everybody. Thank you.
The information provided in this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only, and it does not establish a physician-patient or pharmacist-patient relationship. The opinions expressed by the hosts and guests are their own and do not constitute medical advice. This content is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any medical condition. Always consult with a licensed healthcare provider in your area before making any changes to your personal healthcare regimen or acting on any medical information shared in this podcast.